Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Jewel Network. The Jewel Network is a radio frequency of continuous streaming knowledge and wisdom, which promotes and sustains the activation of the present evolutionary process of immortality and the unfolding of the God Self within the evolving planetary society presently on planet Earth. The Jewel Network is committed to teaching the sciences of life and the science of living. By cultivating the mind of a scientist, you will be able to extract the very best the current century has to offer. You are listening to the Dr. Jewel Show with your host, microbiologist, preventative medicine and hygiene physician, Dr. Jewel Pilgrim, MD. Join Dr. Jewel here each Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Jewel Network, hosted by thejewelnetwork.net.
Welcome, everyone. How are you? I'm Dr. Jewel, and you're tuned into the Dr. Jewel Show. This show is being brought to you by the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living on Blog Talk Radio and the Jewel Network. Well, today, as usual, we have some wonderful things to talk about. Of course, I want to remind you about how incredibly special Friday is, December 21st, 2012, and also, too, we have a spectacular guest on our show, Dr. Nina G. Jamblowski, and we want to talk with her about her fabulous book, Living Color. She's done a wonderful job here in helping people at this important time of our evolution to begin to become comfortable with palettes of skin color, and she's done a great work, an anthropologist, as a matter of fact. So we'll be bringing her on later on, but right now, as usual, we want you to become back, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, so let's make sure you have your notepad, your pencil, obviously you're listening to me, and as usual, make sure that you have water around to keep the brain hydrated as you are taking in this information. Now, as you know, December 21st, 2012, there's been all kind of things said about December 21st, 2012. And I've invited all of you to go to YouTube, look at this fabulous, humorous scientific presentation known as 2012A-Z, 2012 A through Z. Please type that down and make sure that you go visit, because this general took an incredible amount of time. As a matter of fact, he gives you that question at the end of the presentation. How long do you think it took him to put this together? It's got fabulous graphics, wonderful statistics, incredible schemes and animations for you to really understand what's happening with our planet and our major sun and our sector of the solar system, Procyon, and what's happening also with planet Earth. So we've got a lot of things going on here. And so we are going to be experiencing some phenomena from all of the shifts that's been calculated over 6,000 years ago by the Mayan calendar. So I'm not promoting at all with this movie that came out in, I think, 2011, 2010, entitled 2012, is going to bring about. However, we do know one thing, is that the capability of the human brain accessing its mind to change environmental factors is incredible. And the more we're able to become calm and to, most of all, become optimistic on a moment-to-moment, day-to-day level, helps to ensure that any type of climate change will be also calm and well integrated. And we don't have to have these horrendous changes in our environment if we're not thinking in fear and projecting in our prefrontal cortex, that is the front part of your brain that's used for imaging, that's your silver screen, if you're not seeing these things happen, if you don't want to basically face the tsunami, okay, or have to worry about hanging on the edge of the earth because it's opened up under your house or your house crashed or you're floating away, all of these different scenarios that have been projected do not have to occur if you would not help to collapse them into your reality by focusing on that as a potential. Now, definitely there's going to be fluctuations in energy. Many of us are experiencing shifts in how our computers are functioning, and everything seems to be slowing down at times, and things are skipping and reversing. But again, watch the wonderful video. It explains to you what's happening with the electromagnetic field inside the core of Earth, as well as in the atmosphere, our stratosphere, what's happening also in our solar system, the Van Allen Belt, et cetera, and how that's all relating to our central sun. So, again, life always wants to perpetuate itself. And so the intent of literally decimating all life forms is not the intent of the order of the universe. And so with that understanding, we can proceed confidently. Again, it's important that if we do have severe fluctuations where communications are cut off, you do want to be prepared, and you should be reasonably secure about that. You've been asked to always keep excess water and food in your home. Make sure you always have warm clothing, comfortable shoes, etc. But other than that, again, state your consciousness rule. So make sure that you take care of yourself. Think the most optimistic and most evolved thoughts for yourself and for your future. And remember, the World Puja Organization, diamondlightworld.net, this is a website location, all have meditations and focuses available for you. So you can check in with those now and definitely tomorrow to be prepared to really center yourself and allow all this new energy that's coming forth from way distant areas of our galaxy pointed toward our solar system and Earth are now available to you. And many people are already chronicalizing the shifts that they're feeling in their body, what's happening in their psyche, how things are changing in their awareness. And this is all available for each and every one of us. So don't get so much into the humdrum of the routine of what you normally do. This time will not come for, depending upon the calendar you're following, for another 60,000 years. For another 6,000 years. So these events that are occurring and maximizing themselves, we call it a convergence, on Friday, won't be occurring for a long time, and the energy is available to you to literally set a new frequency for you into and throughout the 21st century. So please take advantage of that. Now, I'll be right back after our sponsors, and let's talk more. I'll be right back.
Would you like to be smarter, more at peace in your life, less stressed? Are you searching for a greater spiritual connection? If so, what you need is access to the 90% of your brain that most of us don't even use. All of this and much more can be yours by enrolling in Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program. Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program is a revolutionary program utilizing sacred geometry to connect the logical left and creative right sides of the brain to work with what we call whole brain functionality. Many participants feel effects from day one, and in no time, you can enjoy the physiological effects equal to 8 hours of meditation in as little as 15 minutes a day. Act now to start on this life-changing program and become the person you always wanted to be. To learn more and sign up for Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program, please visit our website, www.thejewelnetwork.net. What are you waiting for? Make the move now.
Well, greetings. If you are just tuning in, welcome. You are tuned in to the Dr. Jewel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jewel, and this show is being brought to you by the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, broadcasting the sciences of life and living on the Jewel Network. So thank you for tuning in. I know everybody's busy and you're running around preparing yourself for the high holidays that are upon us. For those of you who celebrate Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah. Kwanzaa, wonderful seven-day celebration, enjoy. For those of you who celebrate Christmas, please enjoy yourself. But most of all, whatever your high holidays are, please focus and take advantage of the new energies that have now encumbered Earth for our benefit. And they maximize on the 21st of December. These events will not occur for another 6,000 years based on the Mayan calendar. 56,000 years based on our major solar calendar measured from our central sun, Procyon. Interesting, amazing. So there's a lot of things going on here, and we've had all kinds of input from that. And again, I want to remind you, if you really want to get centered and focused, there's organizations around the world that are helping individuals do that. As you know, Julie Appleby from Diamond Life World, who's been a wonderful, wonderful contributor to the science of the light grid in the physical body, and the diamond oscillators within the body, has a special program. So please check in on our website, www.diamondlightworld.net. That's the new location, diamondlightworld.net. World Puja. Puja, so P-E-J-A, is also offering insights, and they have a collection of wonderful enlightened individuals who are making contributions to help individuals shift their frequency for this time. And, of course, how could we not mention www.thelawoftime.org, and this is Jose R. Wellis's website. This gentleman contributed almost 30 years and more of his life to ensuring that as many people in the world were aware of how to begin to tell time by cycle, and also he did exquisite work on mathematically and geometrically demonstrating how the Mayan calendar, how the Mayan clock literally works. He made it so simple and a wonderful, wonderful oracle that was very logical and very precise to use every day to help you through a 24-hour, 28-day lunar solar cycle. Very, very important. So check that out. Wonderful graphics. He's an incredible artist. So that's thelawoftime.org. All of these are locations that will definitely give you more insight on what's happening on Friday and how you can definitely participate in consciousness. And last but definitely not least, ensure that you are going to read the very humorous but very accurately scientifically presented video. 2012 A-Z. You can find it on YouTube. Just put it right in there, person. Well, I don't know if Dr. Nina is having electrical problems or not, but I'm really excited and prepared to talk about her work with her. This is an incredible lady. I'll give you just a little bit of history, and I'm looking forward to her joining us very soon, where she can share herself in more detail why she became interested in skin as an anthropologist and also in melanin. Very interesting. Now, she's very endearingly known at the Pennsylvania State University as Dr. Nina or Dr. J, and she is a distinguished professor of anthropology there at the Pennsylvania State University. So she has literally distinguished herself and has won many honors and fellows. She's been named as one of the first individuals to receive the first Alphonse Fletcher Sr. Costello for her efforts to improve the public understanding of skin color. And she's also on TED.TV, Ted, and she did a great little presentation there on melanin. She also is the recipient of the 2012 Guggenheim Fellowship. Now, she has some very enlightening and very interesting publications. Her original publication, Skin, A Natural History, very impressive, and I am discussing with her today her publication entitled Living Color. Very interesting, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. And this is a very important book at this time because she has very compassionately and very lovingly broached many of the subjects that have created tremendous pain for millions of people all over the world. And so I really applaud her for taking this on and so compassionately bringing to our attention very profoundly how judgments and criticisms in the face of minimal information about this incredible substance known as melanin have severely altered and literally mutated the lives of millions of people. So this misunderstanding and lack of information must change, and thank goodness for the 21st century that it is changing. And again, I applaud her for taking this on in such a heroic but yet so loving manner to demonstrate to us how these perceptions of ourselves, all humans, we all have one head and two arms and two legs and two hands and two feet, that we still allow this very visual, biological substance to cause us to literally act extremely barbaric toward each other in incredible ways. She tells some stories in here, especially in countries such as South Africa, et cetera, that are just unbelievable. The amount of time and energy that has been spent in keeping people separated based on their melanin content. I think that it is quite appropriate to address the very contradictory behavior that we are seeing where in our political, social, economic institutions, we're either aggrandizing or literally nullifying individuals and their lives based on the hue of their skin, but yet and still we're constantly sold on TV, on the magazines, on the billboards, of the importance of having hued skin. So on one hand, we have institutions, pharmaceutical and tanning salons and other interesting products that keep us tan, but then on the other hand, we find that appearing with a hue has consequences. So, something that's very interesting, and I wanted to explain that to her. She has a wonderful scale in here. It's very interesting. And I'm sure this is an anthropological tool that anthropologists use, especially those who are interested in skin and skin color. And it is known as the Lushan color tile for assessing the color of unexposed skin. So they're numbered, and they actually do show hues, which I am interpreting represents a degree of active melanin that is present in tissue and in the skin. And it's interesting. I hope she'll tell a story as to how they ascertain how to use these towels, because they are numbered and have gradations, and what do these numbers and the hues represent, the palatates. also, too, it's very interesting about Soltriol. As you know, our author, Dr. T. Owens Moore, who is a neurophysiologist and the chairman of the Department of Psychology at Fayetteville State University in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And he's done a lot of research on what is commonly known as vitamin D, but he has renamed it as Soltriol, like the sun, S-O-L, T-R-I-O-L, because of the direct involvement of melanin having a direct interaction with the full electromagnetic spectrum, which for us comes from, excuse me, the sun. So, Dr. Nina has done some incredible things here. This is a book that I found like an adventure, very interesting with all the research I've read on melanin, and most of it, again, is high-tech scientific research language and usually does not venture any further than the circles who usually are the lab technicians or the heads of the research projects who make the inquiry. And so to see something of this magnitude, the book is just really well written, and I enjoyed her notes as much as I did the general text here. And usually we don't get a chance to see many authors share with us their own personal feelings, little stories and adventures about how they came across certain information to imbue a greater understanding in their works. And she shares that with us. Very nice pictures, photographs, and so it is something I do want you to invest in. Again, we're talking about the book Living Color, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color by Dr. Nina G. Jambowski from Pennsylvania State University. And I understand she's finally made it here. She's on our way, Blaine. And I'm just so happy that she's been able to get with us because we know the frequencies are definitely undulating at this time. So, hi, Dr. Nina, how are you?
Words.
How are you, Dr. Nina? How are you? This is cool.
I'm great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you're here, and I've just very superficially kind of went over the book because, of course, if I have the author here who can really give us the incredible details, I don't want to give that up. So I've already introduced you, and everybody's waiting. So my first question to you is that if you could just tell us what attracted your attention to become an anthropologist. You know, usually the anthropologists, we just read about them when there's some breaking news or discovery, but usually are not publicly written, and, you know, they don't make appearances usually like this. But we're excited to have this level of science come to us because the Jewel Network is devoted to helping everyone create the mind of a scientist. So what got you interested in that?
Well, I became an anthropologist, I think, when I was about 3 years old, but I didn't know it. I've always been interested in fossils and evolution and specifically in how humans evolved. And so I'm interested in the fossil record, but also I'm interested in how humans over time have adapted to different environments and how we have dispersed physically over time and adapted both biologically and culturally to different environments. So skin and skin color is part of this, and I've been interested in it for ever such a long time.
Wow, that's amazing. So were, as a little girl at 3 years old, were you collecting rocks at a big fossil?
Yeah. One of the first pictures that my parents ever took of me is on our driveway in upstate New York, and I have my eyes trained on the ground, reaching down to pick up a fossil. So I've been doing this a long time. I found the evidence of evolution very, very interesting, and especially the evidence of evolution as related to the human lineage. And so, yes, I think I didn't know what an anthropologist was at age three, but I was definitely engaging in the adaptive behaviors, as it were. I love what I'm doing. I love studying the development of the human condition.
No question. And I was just so embraced and so appreciative of how you have broached such a rebellious and very antagonizing subject. And, you know, it's very interesting because we are both here together, you, Melanin Recessors, it appears, and myself, Melanin Dominant. And so seeing this whole scenario from a different perspective, but very clearly recognizing the importance that this biopolymer, melanin, is such a critical factor in our lives, it's very interesting to be able to discuss it from such a humane and intelligent perspective, which, as you know, recently, only until recently, has that occurred.
Yes.
So,
and this is one of these topics that really just needs to be talked about. It has been, at least with regard to melanin in humans, this is something that is only mentioned in clinical circles generally, and it's considered to be off limits at best in the social sciences and in general scientific discourse. And I think we now must talk about this because melanin has tremendous biological significance to us and tremendous social significance. And we need to talk about both of these aspects. And what my book does is really try to unite them, really help people to understand what an interesting molecule melanin is, what it does in our skin, how it evolved to be part of our skin, why people have different amounts of it depending on where their ancestors lived, and then what it means to us in a greater social context. And that latter part of the story is, of course, a huge part of American and world history.
Oh, no question. And I really appreciate how you literally have taken us on this journey on the, what I call, multi-hued palette of skin color, brick road. And
yes.
No pun intended, since you used the Lucian tiles, the tiles. Yeah,
yes.
I thought that was interesting. But now I'm going to ask you a question here because you have a chapter entitled The Original Skin.
Yes.
And so do you agree that, as you define it, modern humans, approximately 20,000 years ago and forward, literally all originated from the African continent, and that they were all melanated originally?
Yes, there is really no doubt about two things. First, that our species, Homo sapiens, originated in Africa, and the date of that now has been pushed back considerably. We now have good fossil and DNA evidence indicating that that was probably around 150,000 years ago that Homo sapiens evolved in Africa. And all members of Homo sapiens that evolved at that time had darkly pigmented skin, which matched beautifully the strong sunlight that they were living under. Naked skin requires protection, and melanin pigment delivers that protection.
Well,
so those are two indisputable facts.
Well, great, and that is, as you know, just those statements right there have been argued and ignored and just a lot of other things. And, you know, myself, as a medical doctor, we were given very little information when I was in my clinical year on literally how to handle dysfunctional skin, which appeared to be initiated in the melanosome, in the melanocyte, et cetera. And even to this day, I still do not identify in the literature where this really has been upgraded significantly. And usually we just put them to sleep in the form of using steroids, et cetera. But
yes,
to really begin to understand what is the major malfunction, if it really is a malfunction, is it a nutrient deficiency? That kind of investigation has really yet to really be stormed, or should I say stormtrooped as an interest, just getting down to the very essence of how important this is, because, as you know, beyond or beneath the skin, melanin is necessary for every chromosome, every gene, every nucleus of the cell, and every mitochondria and the microtubule system. But it seems as though everybody's just been stuck on the superficial, and they're missing why the education of this molecule is so important.
Well, one of the problems is that most clinical studies of skin were historically undertaken in Europe and later in North America by people with very little melanin in their own skin. And so depigmented skin became the norm against which other skin was studied. And this, we now realize, in the context of evolution, is completely upside down, because depigmented skin that we find among Europeans and Asians is an evolutionarily later phenomenon due to different genetic mutations that caused loss of melanin pigment in the skin. And so actually depigmented skin is specialized for synthesizing or producing vitamin D under low solar conditions in Europe and Asia. And this is a condition that has only existed for small populations historically for a small fraction of our entire species history. When we look at our species, we've spent most of our time in Africa. We have been darkly pigmented. That pigmentation has worked extremely well to protect our skin from a variety of noxious physical and chemical influences, and it's only been in the last 20 to 30,000 years, as humans have dispersed and adapted to conditions outside of the African tropics, that we see depigmented skin. My point is that all of the textbooks have been written based on depigmented or white skin being the norm. And that is what we now need to turn on its head. It will take generations, but we need to do it.
Well, again, that's why we have you here on the Jewel Network, because we recognize that for us to be the incredible species we have the potential to be, we have to start functioning on truth and on accurate information. And so you've done a wonderful job collecting that and sharing that with us in a way that is totally embraceable. Nothing offensive about how you've approached this incredibly volatile subject at all. And we've got to go to a commercial break, but when we return, I really want you to share with us the use of this Lushen color tile assessment technique. Is this an anthropological?
Yes, and I'll tell you about it after your break.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
From Jewel Publications, Straight from the Heart by Dr. Jewel Pookrum. An incredible volume of work, Dr. Jewel explores the genesis of disease, prostate health, and sexuality, as well as sharing a new look at the effects emotions play in the resolution of cancer. Straight from the Heart is an outpouring of wisdom that you will read over again. Get your paperback or ebook copy today.
Well, greetings. If you're just tuning in, a wonderful show, I tell you. Make sure you listen to the archives here. Again, I do want to remind you that Friday is a very profound day. You do want to take advantage of the energy. Again, you can go to YouTube and in the search engine look for a very wonderful, humorous presentation 2012 from A to Z. Very interesting. It's only about an hour long, but it tells you astrologically, astronomically, geologically, what's really happening here with this convergence of all the things that are going on in our sector of the galaxy. And you want to be aware of that. So check that out. Again, make sure you check into worldpuja.org, diamondlightworld.net, and thelawoftime.org for their information about what's happened with the Mayan calendar and all these different things that are going on, so you can be in the know of what's happening. Of course, we have with us today Dr. Nina Stamblowski, who is an anthropologist at Pennsylvania State University, who, again, has written a wonderful book. Please make sure you add this to your library, Living Color, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. Very wonderful book, and Nina's here with us on the live. So again, pay attention, take notes, and she's going to tell us, she has this in her chapter here, chapter 82 on biology. It's nice how she's broken this down. She has a section on biology regarding pigment and melanin, and then she goes into social implications, which are very profound. You handle that so lovingly. But let's talk about this palette of tiles that is used. Is this an anthropological tool that talks about the hues of pigment?
Well, actually, this has a very interesting history. These color tiles were the earliest widely used method for actually describing skin color. You can imagine when scientists first started showing an interest in skin color, they had a real problem communicating with one another, because what some people might call brown, others people might call tan or cocoa or another color. So there was all sorts of problems, and you can readily imagine, in using different words to describe color. And so in the middle of the 19th century, the Austrian scholar, naturalist, and anthropologist Felix von Luschan decided to develop a series of color-matching tiles that people could use to assign skin color values to. So you can take this little group of tiles into a field situation and match the skin color of someone with the tiles. And so worldwide, everyone could be a number 15 or a number 22 or a number 33 or whatever. Now,
is that still used today?
No, they're not. And they're not used for good reason. Because since the mid 1900s, about 1950 or so, a much better series of techniques has been developed based on the measurement of the amount of skin, of the amount of light reflected from the surface of the skin. If you shine a light of a white light, or if you shine a light of a particular color on a person's skin, a certain amount will be reflected back. And this technique that measures the amount of reflected light is called reflectometry. And now, and since about the mid-1950s, the technique of reflectance spectrophotometry, or reflectometry, is what is used to measure skin pigmentation much more accurately. And so the tiles were a sort of a great intermediate step, but now the measurement of reflected light allows us to very accurately and reproducibly measure skin pigmentation. And you'll find some dermatologists now use good quality reflectance spectrophotometers in their office. It's not common still because they're fairly expensive pieces of equipment, but those of us who study skin color in field situations and in the lab use this piece of apparatus, and it's remarkably accurate and reproducible.
Yes, I noted that in your book, and that's very interesting. And also, because I'm really still so interested in the anthropological aspect of skin, you made a statement that anthropologically you're not able to do much interaction with skin if the fossil is over 1,000 years old. Is that still the case?
That's right, because when an organism dies, including when a person dies, their skin rapidly breaks down. And so even if you're not buried in a sort of a traditional burial as we would engage in, if you let's say died in the forest or died in the middle of a grassland, much as one of our ancestors might have died, your flesh will literally decay and fall off your bones and be degraded within a matter of weeks and months. And so it's only under very rare circumstances that we find skin of humans or any animal preserved for more than a few thousand years. We have a few examples. I mean, mummies are good examples of humans that have been preserved for more than a few thousand years. Natural mummies that occur in desert situations in the Caucasus Mountains in Central Asia and in the Peruvian Andes are known. These were naturally mummified under very dry conditions. There are also people whose skin has been preserved in peat bogs, in the acidic environment of peat bogs. But again, this is only for a few thousand years. What I'm interested in is tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of years. And so for that, we have no actual skin evidence. All we have is comparative evidence, comparing humans to our close relatives and comparing our anatomy, our physiology, and the genetic coding for skin in different human populations and across our primate relatives. So we use lots of indirect means to study the evolution of skin.
Well, let me just progress this a little bit in your book. Two things I'd like, if it's comfortable with you. First of all, at the last 15 minutes of our show, would you be willing to take a few questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, wonderful. And everybody, please pay attention, and you can broach your question to Dr. Nina at 347-215-9531. That's 347-215-9531. So just call in so you can get your place on the line and detain in there. Because I have one more question before we go to the line that I think is just really intriguing, and I want you to just tell us just a little bit about this concept. I love this term, colorism. Tell us about this.
This is, I think, one of the most important terms that is not used very much, but we all can recognize it when we hear it.
Yeah.
Colorism is the deliberate preference within any group for more lightly pigmented people. So within any particular sort of population, ethnic or so-called racial population, we see deliberate preference for more lightly pigmented individuals. And this colorism is really a culturally developed trait that has been passed on and intensified over hundreds of years of socialization, and now is, of course, being even made stronger through the various media that we're all exposed to. I can provide a few interesting examples here. We know that, for instance, that more lightly pigmented individuals are favored in movie roles. For instance, Nina Simone, her biopic is going to be made with a very lightly pigmented actress because more lightly pigmented individuals are considered more socially acceptable and attractive. So that's colorism.
The family was quite annoyed with that. That was quite controversial.
Yes, it is, and with absolutely good cause, because we continue to lionize the virtues of light pigmentation by simply presenting more and more lightly pigmented social icons and celebrities. And this makes it increasingly hard for people with dark pigmentation, whether you're a darkly pigmented African American, Latino, South Asian, whatever. Your pigmentation is going to work against you because of this prevalent colorism. So people should understand the meaning of this word and, I hope, really work against it.
Well, you know, what many people are thinking as they're hearing you give us this definition and the use of this term, what is the distinct difference between racism and colorism?
Well, for instance, you can have colorism operating within a so-called race. And so I'm sure many of your listeners will understand this very clearly. Within any group, within Latino Americans, within African Americans, there is preference for more lightly pigmented individuals. So this, we're not talking about between races. We're talking about within a given race. So this is really preference for lighter pigmentation. And assuming that someone with lighter pigmentation has a better personality, has more acceptable social qualities, has better educational prospects, and a whole range of other misconceptions. This is a very widespread set of beliefs. So it's very different from racism in that it occurs within a group and often operates in a very sinister and insidious fashion within any group.
Right. Well, we have callers waiting, but I just have to just ask you this question. You know, I had the opportunity to speak with you privately a while ago, and as I shared with you, one of my mentors, Dr. Stanley Garn, who obviously is not with us, but definitely for a very long time at the University of Michigan, was a professor emeritus for their human ecology program.
Yes.
And he cautioned me over and over again, and it was very difficult for me even to grasp at that time, that he made it very clear that he used the term race variance. And he would caution me over and over again about making sure that I had to use variance behind the word race, because what we are literally seeing in his teaching was literally a different expression, but of the same human genome. And
that
it really been a misperception that there are races because there's only one race, which is the human race. However, environment, consciousness, diet, and, you know, all those things that you've listed in your book are affecting as to how groups of people, cultures, are literally turning on and off or vacillating certain groups of genes. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I mean, I certainly agree with Professor Garn's statement, because we are one human species that cannot be divided into things called races. And further, the entities that have been identified as races are real biological misconceptions, because they do not exist. Most races, when you look at, for instance, the races that have been defined in the United States, these are quite different from those that have been defined in Brazil or India or elsewhere. There is no uniformity in the definition of races, even within the Americas, where the source populations are very similar. It is impossible to actually divide people into races, because the physical and other characteristics that humans have do not partition into packages called races. Another huge problem, and I won't go on too long, I could go on for hours about this, but a big problem with the use of the term race is that it describes a group of physical characteristics as well as behavioral and cultural characteristics. When races were first described by European scientists in the 19th century, they were described as levels of civilization and behavior in addition to skin color, eye color, hair texture, and so forth. And if ever there was a tool for the subjugation of people and the creation of false feelings of superiority and inferiority, it was the establishment of racial categories.
Exactly. Well, you have callers waiting, so I think that we should get to them. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, caller 404, we have you on the line. How are you? And welcome to the Dr. Jewel Show. You're here with myself and Dr. Nina. You have a question for us?
Yes. Peace and greetings, Dr. Jewel and Dr. Jablonski. It's a pleasure to listen to the show. I'm thoroughly enjoying. I have a quick question. In reference to when you had stated that the first humans were found in Africa over 150,000 years ago, what was the landscape? Was the Atlantic Ocean present, or was the Americas adjoined to Africa at that time?
At that time, the continents were essentially in their completely modern configuration. The Atlantic Ocean was just as wide as it is today, perhaps just a few centimeters narrower, but basically in its modern configuration, and the rest of the continents were similarly in their modern configurations. Basically, the continents have looked quite modern for the last million years, and the oceans have been roughly, they've been closely similar to the modern condition for about the last million years. So there have been no major changes.
Okay. And then the second question is in regards to, you said the primate relatives. When you say that, are you speaking of the troglodytes? Or
I'm speaking of our closest relatives are chimpanzees, our closest living relatives, okay? About, 6 to 7 million years ago, the human lineage shared a common ancestor with chimpanzees. And so we both share a common ancestor. And then if we go back even farther in time, chimpanzees and humans together share a common ancestor with gorillas about 11 million years ago. And we can go farther back yet and go to deeper branching points. The point is that we are closely related to African apes, and we are a lineage of African apes. I love that concept, I want people to embrace it.
You know what's so interesting that you say that? I came across that ancient tapestry out of Germany that depicts the wild men and the Moors, and the wild men appear to be a mixture of half beast and half animal, and they are pale in complexion, and the Moors were very dark and rich with melanin. And then after that, I saw a coat of arms that depicted a wild man who again appeared with pale skin, and he was half animal and half human. And then on the shield, there was a picture of a deer and a picture of a Moorish head. So with that in mind, is it that there were actually experiments where there were Moorish men and women pretty much crossbred with animals, which resulted in the albino?
Well, there's no evidence of such experiments, at least no evidence that I'm aware of, which is not to say that it didn't happen, but it's not well known. One of the things that we do know is that in tapestries and paintings, different groups tended to depict people from other lands in fairly striking terms. And so you have a lot of depictions of Europeans that look very brutish. You know, the people are depicted with pale skin and, you know, hair coming out of, you know, their chests and, you know, wild hair on their heads and looking, you know, sort of very, very primitive. It's not impossible that this is simply a sort of a pejorative caricature depiction of another modern population.
Well, Dr. Nina, thank you so much, Mr., for calling. I really appreciate those questions. Dr. Nina, you know, this is a this is an incredible discussion here, and truly we can go for further dialogue and investigation for hours. I will say this. I know for a fact that there's a large conglomerate of individuals who are definitely not agreeing with the chimpanzee relationship at all, and as a matter of fact, they are just waiting for beings from other solar systems to come and really tell us that, you know, we have literally originated from extraterrestrial DNA. Now, this will be something that I think all anthropologists will be excited to hear those stories and to ask for proof. And so we're right now at a precipice where it appears is that the answers that are going to come to this kind of conversation and what other people are projecting from the stars is going to really be something that is going to be an amazing story. What do you think?
Well, I am always open to new evidence. I tend not to subscribe to the idea that we evolved from extraterrestrial sources because I study the evidence that we find around us that is very strongly convincing. But I, as a scientist, work on the basis of evidence, and so I am always welcome to new evidence.
Well, wonderful. Well, you know, Dr. Nina, we have such a short period of time. You know, guests like you, I mean, we need to really give you days and days to talk about this, and I hope that everybody is motivated, again, to purchase her latest book, Living Color, A Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. Fabulous Christmas gift, I tell you. You know, include this as a fabulous gift for individuals who really want to know. And Dr. Nina, I would love to invite you back. Can we have a round two? Because I really want you to discuss with us the whole social aspect of this book. What do you think?
Well, I'd love to come back at some point. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And again, you've been listening to the Dr. Jewel Show, and I've had a wonderful guest here with me today. Dr. Nina Jamblowski, and please get her book, Wonderful Christmas Gift, Living Color, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. And the book itself is quite exciting, very intriguing. I love the references, and I'm just really impressed with the notes, wonderful notes. And thanks so much for including us in your personal thoughts. I thought that was just so giving of you. We are really appreciated. So everyone, remember, this Friday, this is December 21st, 2012, we click into the energy. We are referencing the locations for you where you can. This is a big switchover that's happening in our solar system and in our sector of the universe. And most of all, remember that we'll be back on Friday with music for the mind of a scientist. Very important, the tonation that you expose the brain to. And I'll be back on Monday with the Dr. Jewel Brain Balancing Program. Love you so much. Thank you. And thanks, Dr. Nina, for being here with us. And we'll have you back soon. Thank you so much. Love you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Jewel Network. For our complete broadcast schedule, additional information, and to purchase products, please visit our website at www.thejewelnetwork.net. If you'd like to reach us, please send an email to info@thejewelnetwork.net.